We're reading from John 11, from 1 to 47, I think. 45. The death of Lazarus. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you are going to go back there." Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him." Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him, "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and he is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply troubled, moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odour, for he's been in there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did put their faith in him.
When things are going wrong, we find ourselves often caught in the trap of trying to apportion responsibility. Last night was the results of the New South Wales state election, and today in the papers there were all kinds of reasons as to why the Liberal Party lost and the Labor Party won. There were four reasons that I could tell that people were saying. One, they weren't conservative enough. Two, they weren't progressive enough. Three, I can't remember them all now. There were four very disparate things. All
they couldn't find the middle ground.
Yeah, they were too much in the middle. I don't know. just four reasons just there from experts. But that's often what happens in churches. It happens too, doesn't it? When things aren't going the way we think they should be, there's all kinds of fault finding that happens towards that. It happens in all kinds of situations in life. There is a time, isn't there, for sorting out where things have gone wrong. There is a time for that. But generally, we jump into that way too quickly. We find ourselves doing this, and it reveals that we're actually fearful and that we believe that what we're facing is somehow irreversible and insurmountable. Blaming is an attempt at coping with or offloading our fear onto something else. It's a pretty impotent way of doing it, but it's what we do. Now, in today's reading, I don't know if you heard it, but Jesus is blamed time and again for Lazarus's death. When he heard the news that Lazarus was ill, he didn't rush off to help, but he stayed 2 days later where he was before leaving. There's all kinds of ways you could understand that. Was he delaying or was he hurrying? He wasn't hurrying away straight away, that's true, but was he getting some things done before he left, or was he delaying deliberately? I think it's an open question as to why he delayed the 2 days. He doesn't explain it, does he? When he finally gets to Bethany, probably on the fourth day after he heard the news, so the 2 days of wait, then the day he leaves, and then getting to Bethany the day after that. So when he gets there on the fourth day after he heard the news, Lazarus has died by then. And the dead man's sisters, Martha and Mary, who are really two of Jesus' closest friends, they felt terribly disappointed in him. Verse 21, Martha says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And Mary, later on in verse 32, when she comes out to the tomb, she says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And then the friends who are consoling them, they're struck at how Jesus, when Jesus weeps, that they think he loved Lazarus. But others say, I'll just find it here, it's in, get the right chapter. In verse 37, some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" So Lazarus's illness was a problem, and Jesus hadn't helped. And now the situation was irreversible and insurmountable. And these are all saying it's Jesus' fault. Well, to be honest, we've probably had those thoughts at times, haven't we, about Jesus? Lord, if only you had helped. If only you had done something. If you had, we wouldn't be in the spot we're in. To me, it sounds a bit like Mary and Martha got their stories straight. I think they'd talked together and they both were agreed about this. If only Jesus had been here, if only he'd come. John notes that when Jesus arrived, Lazarus had died 4 days earlier. Verse 17, now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. I think that's a pretty telling little bit of information. So Jesus waited 2 days, travelled, and then came on the fourth day. So the day Jesus heard the news, Lazarus was dead. They're the 4 days. He heard the news and Lazarus was already dead. If he'd rushed down, he would have been too late. He would have been a day late. So there was no way for Jesus to get to Bethany in time to heal him. That's not to make an excuse for Jesus. Oh, see, it wasn't worth the effort anyway. It's just that the thinking of the accusation is misplaced. They would have known, they would have sent the messenger the day before Lazarus died, knowing that it would take a day for the messenger to get up to see to where Jesus was. And so it's, you know, Lord, if you'd been here, our brother would not have died. Now, the real question when there is trouble is not really who's to blame. Jesus actually tells us what the real question is. When the disciples are when Jesus hears the message, he says, this illness doesn't lead to death. I mean, that sounds like, well, he got that wrong. No, but I think he's saying something quite significant there, isn't he? He says, it's for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So when there's trouble, the real question is, where is the glory of God here? How is God going to display his glory here? So Jesus doesn't rush off to heal Lazarus because he knew that the situation was for the glory of God. We know also from John's gospel that Jesus can actually heal from a distance, don't we? Like the centurion's son, he can speak a word. The question to ask from today's reading is, how is Jesus glorified by the dying and the raising of Lazarus? In the Anglican Church this morning, the Old Testament reading that was paired with this was the reading from Ezekiel chapter 37, where the prophet is shown the dry bones, the valley of dry bones. And the Lord speaks to the prophet and he says to him, mortal, can these bones live? And the prophet Ezekiel replies, well, you know. And then he calls him to prophesy to the dry bones and call them to live. Sometimes I think in the Christian West at the moment, we may be wondering, can the church last another two generations? Don't you think? the congregation I was at this morning, the average age would easily be over 75, because I don't think apart from Liz and I there's anybody under 75 there. And you can hear it in the conversation that we're keeping the doors open as long as we can, but that there's, that the days are numbered. So, mortal, can these bones live? What can God do here? What can God do for the church in the West? Can there be a new day? Now, the other thing that happens when things go wrong is that there may be those who taunt and mock. And that was certainly true in the papers today, also after the New South Wales election. There were those who were happy to na-na-na-na at the situation. What's happened has seemingly proved them right and the one in trouble wrong. Everyone's an expert when there's trouble. Death is a terrible taunter. Death mocks all of our plans and all of our hopes. Death is a kind of marker, a guard, that we spend our lives trying to slip past or hope to never reach. But death is still there and mocks us, telling us that whatever we do, whatever we think, whatever we believe, whatever we accomplish, finally we belong to him, this awful power. It's as though our lives are lived under his word, I know where you live and I'm coming to get you. And so we spend our lives trying to avoid death. We don't talk about it. We don't think about it. We block our ears and sing la, la, la if anyone else tries to talk about it. It happens at funerals. They used to be called funerals. Do you remember that back in the day when they were called funerals? What are they called now? Celebrations of life. They're not grieving for death. It's very hard to actually speak about death at a funeral because people are blocking their ears and singing la, la, la. But whatever we do, however we spend our lives trying to avoid death or refusing to talk about it, pretending it hasn't happened when we're faced with it, death claims to have the last word about us and our lives, and it taunts us. Now, everyone in this account, bar Jesus, has bought that lie that death has the final word to say about us. The disciples, they're convinced that if Jesus goes south, back down towards Bethany, that he's going to get killed, because already the plots are there amongst the religious leaders to do away with him. And they're quite right. That's actually what they're plotting. So they don't want him to go there. And when he insists, Thomas sums up their feeling. I reckon Thomas must have been the puddle glum of the disciple band. You know, if anybody was feeling a bit chipper, you know, Thomas would come and set them right about, you know, it's not really as good as you think. He sums Jesus up with what Jesus is intending to do with, let's go with him so that we can die too. Martha thinks that if Jesus had come before Lazarus died, everything would be all right. But now she's in wistful uncertainty. Yeah, she's got a belief that there's a resurrection of the dead someday. But I think the way she speaks about it all seems so far away and a little bit intangible and uncertain. Mary is overcome by her grief. She's again lamenting the slowness of Jesus to come and help. It's all too late. The neighbours are there, but they have no expectation of the resurrection. And Martha, really, she doesn't have any expectation of resurrection, even though she's had that conversation with Jesus, and Jesus says, your brother will rise again. And she says, yes, Lord, I believe that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. And then Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And she says, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, who's coming into the world. But then when Jesus says, roll the stone away from the tomb, no, no, Lord, don't do that. He stinketh. That's the AV version. There's a smell in there, Lord, the smell of death. What would bring faith? What would turn from this certainty that death actually does have the last word to seeing it all in a new way? Jesus speaks with a loud voice. Lazarus, come out! And Lazarus, who couldn't believe a thing, really, he's dead and wrapped and buried. He hears this strong word of Jesus. And he must have looked like a mummy, you know, in one of those horror movies, still wrapped up, face, you know, cloth on his face still. It's interesting that John records those details here, isn't it? Because when Jesus rises, none of that's there. He is completely triumphant over death in himself. But here comes Lazarus, and he kind of comes bounding out. And Jesus says, unbind him and let him go. And there he is. He's heard the strong word of Jesus. The voice of the Lord is a powerful voice, isn't it? So this is where we see the glory of Jesus. Jesus is the great power over all the powers. Not even death, that proud and arrogant tyrant, can claim to be the final ruler of our lives. The glory of Jesus is that he has the powerful word to waken even the dead to life. Jesus' voice is so powerful, it can speak life into lifeless souls. Unless Jesus called him, Lazarus couldn't hear a thing, let alone jump up and exit the grave. But the keys of death and of life are in Jesus' hands. As Wesley puts it, he always gets it right, I think, Charles Wesley. Jesus is the name high over all in hell or earth or sky. Before him, angels and men fall, and devils fear and fly. So death should not be so proud. I love John Donne's Holy Sonnet, number 10. You probably know it. If you did English at school, I think they used to teach this. I kind of remember it from there. So I looked it up again. What this holy sonnet does is it taunts death. Death, the great taunter, is taunted through the resurrection power of Jesus Christ. This is what John Donne says. Death, be not proud, though some have called thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. For those whom thou thinkest thou dost overthrow, die not, poor death, nor yet canst thou kill them, nor yet canst thou kill me. So you think you've had a victory. Oh, death, where is your victory? It's not there. He goes on and he kind of mocks death by saying there are these things that are kind of pictures of you and we get a lot of pleasure from them. So how much more pleasure will come to us through death? Not because of death itself, but because of Christ, is really what he's saying. But he says, from rest and sleep, which but thy pictures be, much pleasure. Don't you love a good sleep? Then from thee much more must flow. If they're just the pictures of a little death, that unconsciousness, there must be much more pleasure that comes our way through death. And he says, and soonest our best men with thee do go, rest of their bones and soul's delivery. And then he talks about how death is really, it pretends to be powerful, but it's really captive in a way to chance. He says, thou art slave to fate, chance, kings and desperate men, and dost with poison, war and sickness dwell, and poppy or charms can make us sleep as well and better than thy stroke. Why swellest thou then? One short sleep past, we shall wake eternally, and death shall be no more. Death, thou shalt die. Jesus, the name high over all in hell or earth or sky. He speaks here. This whole event is so that the power, the triumph, the lordship, the glory of Jesus be seen. The raising of Lazarus is a sign of the promise of Jesus that all who believe will be raised to share eternal life with him. Jesus doesn't just work a resurrection, he is the resurrection. He who believes in me shall never die. He who, though he die, yet shall he live. There's the glory of Jesus. He has power over death. He brings the dead to life. He's the great saviour. This will mean for him his death and his rising. And from that day on, death can never be proud again. Jesus Christ is Lord. So we have these things in our lives where death comes, or tragedy or sadness or difficulty, a problem that seems insurmountable and irreversible. And Jesus has this strong voice. That strong voice tells us that finally, that is not the power that rules the world. We may think that the situation of the church in the West is irreversible. You know, we may get glum about the prospects of Christianity in the West. Just by the way, we're so Westocentric in our thinking. The gospel is triumphing around the world. And it is also triumphing in the West. But Jesus, he is the strong voice of God that speaks life into lifeless souls. The story of the church in the West isn't finished. Modernism and secularism and postmodernism and all those things are not the final word. Jesus Christ is the final word. He is the word of life. He is the word of the reign of God. Shall these bones live? And we look at it and we think it's a valley of dry bones. And then what the Lord tells us to do, or tells the prophet to do there, and he really tells the church, we're called to be the prophets of God in the world. We're called to speak the strong word of Jesus Christ into the world and see life come where we thought death was insurmountable and irreversible. We have a word for our world that is life-giving. It's so we can take great confidence in Jesus Christ. Amen.